Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who, like me, have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt. That they have become counterproductive. They cannot be fixed. Our mission is to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning treacherous and errant schemes, even if they're religious and patriotic, it isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its liberating, enriching, and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. A married freshman Republican congressman who campaigned on his Christian conservative values. There was a little bit of a pickle on Monday. He apologized after surveillance video surfaced showing him in a lengthy lip lock with a staffer. Now, we're all flawed. And boys will be boys, as they say. And I look at the guy that God called out to say, you know, that is my favorite dude. I just love David, whose real name is Dode, which means beloved. And, you know, he had a fixation with the ladies. You know, he put together a harem. Didn't please God that he did so. God was quite annoyed, actually, with his building of a harem. But the realization that we are flawed individuals is it's pretty obvious. So you normally get uptight that a congressman would be caught in a passionate kiss with a married staffer, he himself being married. Not ordinarily. But I don't much care for hypocrites. Someone who campaigned saying that you should vote for me because of my conservative Christian values. Now, that's a different story. In December 23, the footage obtained by a local newspaper, Republican Vance McAllister, who is this Republican congressman from Louisiana, who ahead of his election last fall ran multiple campaign ads trumpeting his faith and his family. Well, he's seen kissing and embracing a woman for about 20 seconds in his Monroe, Louisiana district office at the back door. The newspaper there reports that the woman is the congressman's 33-year-old part-time scheduler, and she is also married. Turning to the news of last week, but released this week, Fort Hood, Texas. Army investigators on Monday released more detailed timeline information of last week's fatal shooting at Fort Hood, describing an 8-minute rampage in which the suspect fired 35 shots over an area spanning the equivalent of 2 city blocks. Now, I want you to tell me, does the fact that he shot for 8 minutes matter? Does the fact that he shot 35 times, not 34 or 36, is it relevant? No, that's not why I'm reading this story to you. There is something relevant about this story. It's extraordinarily important. 3 people were killed and 16 others were wounded in the shooting spree before the suspect, Specialist Ivan Lopez, killed himself, authorities said. During a news conference on Monday, Army spokesperson Chris Gray said that the shootings at the Texas Post followed an argument. Would a normal argument, you know, somebody has a workplace disagreement, you don't like something your boss did, you give a bad review, didn't get the proper raise, didn't get promoted to the job that you might have coveted, get treated poorly in business, then you have an argument with your boss in business. It happens every day. People have different perceptions of their own worth. But it doesn't very often lead to somebody saying, you know, the only remedy here is for me to not only kill myself, but make a point by killing others. It just doesn't happen. Now, I know that occasionally someone would go postal on their comrades, but even that is rare. So what was it about this argument that makes this discussion meaningful? We'll see if you can ascertain it. The argument related to Lopez's request for taking leave didn't indicate whether it was granted or describe the circumstances behind the request. We're just going to keep that information from you. We're going to tell you that he wanted leave. We're not going to tell you if we gave it to him or what he wanted the leave for or why it may have been denied. Now, if it was granted, you think he would have shot? So it was denied. Now, why is that important? Important for two reasons. One is, this man was being treated for a mental disability. They knew that he was mentally unstable. He was meeting routinely with psychiatrists. He was taking mind-altering drugs prescribed by those psychiatrists. It was known that he was mentally unstable. At that point, since you are the Army after all, and since you use weapons, wouldn't the moral, right, appropriate thing to do simply release the man? To say, you know, we probably shouldn't have people that are mentally unbalanced, that are taking drugs, have access to weapons. This is probably not a good idea. They didn't figure that out. That's point one. Point two. If you have a disagreement in ordinary business, if you're asking the next person at the drive-through line, would you like fries with that too, ma'am? And you are unhappy that when you ask for some time off, you just leave that job. That's all there is to it. But in the military, you're not free. You have no freedom. You have to sacrifice all freedom. You sacrifice your free will. You follow their orders. You go where they tell you to go. When they tell you to go, you aren't given the opportunity to ask questions. You're just told. It is the least free part of the world society. I share that with you, and that was this man's problem. He wanted some time. He wanted to be free. And they would not allow that. So he rebelled in the only way that he thought would make his point. To be free of the military, he shot himself, and to make a point, he took others with him. You ought not join the U.S. military. If you're in, you ought to find a way to get out. If you're a parent, you ought not let your son or daughter consider joining the U.S. military. They will surrender their freedom. They will be indoctrinated. They will be taught to kill. They will be sent places that make bad situations worse. They will come back haunted by what they have seen. They will be used in despicable ways. You just ought not do it. This man wanted freedom. The military was unwilling to give it to him. This speaks to the problem of propaganda, where the military is presented as preserving freedoms for Americans, when in fact it is the least free organization within America. Speaking of errant communications, a major new Gallup survey suggests that the Obamacare sign-up numbers are not nearly as soaring as the White House claims. In fact, they're really quite impoverished. The massive survey released on Monday shows that the number of insured did fall slightly, and that may well have been as a product of the Affordable Care Act. You know, the administration spent a lot of time promoting it, advertising it on television and radio. And after all, they're giving away health care free via the uninsured. The Gallup Hathaway's Well-Being Index measured that the share of adults without health insurance shrank from 17% at the end of last year to 15.6%, so it fell about 1%. big whoop. You're putting all of Americans through a ringer. Taking away insurance that people liked, saying you can't have that anymore. Making the people that actually were responsible and purchased their own insurance have now to pay premiums that are three or four times what they previously paid for insurance that is actually less desirable to them, with deductibles that are four and five times larger than they previously were. You're burdening the responsible Americans so that you can reduce the uninsured by 1%. On the face of it, it's grotesque. It is why everything that government does is inefficient and ineffective. The decline of approximately 1% would translate into approximately 3 million people gaining coverage. But the administration has been talking about 7, 8, 9 million. And at most, the number is around 3. But the numbers released a week after the close of the health care law's first enrollment session also suggest a far more modest impact on coverage than the statistics cited by the liar-in-chief, Mr. Obama. The administration says that 7.1 million people have signed up for subsidized private plans through the new insurance markets. 7.1 million people for subsidized private plans. That means you can, this Obama world where the government becomes responsible for everybody, you can make up to $94,000 a year, and the government will subsidize your health care. Oh, boy, government is really looking out for you. Of course, it's going bankrupt in the process, which means there will be total anarchy. Well, everything is made worse in the short term. The country will collapse economically because of this. But 7.1 and 3 million are fairly divergent numbers, aren't they? In fact, 7.1 is more than twice the maximum that is possible according to the most massive survey ever conducted on health care. He's exaggerated. Doubling, more than doubling reality. We'll be back in a moment. So the question is, why are the numbers so divergent? Why is the administration talking about 7.1 that have signed up for subsidized plans? It would be directly related to the provisions of the Affordable Care Act, which is unaffordable for anybody that's responsible, only affordable for those who are unresponsible. The difference, well, you know, the administration numbers include people who switched or were dropped from previous coverage. You know, they're saying the 7.1 have signed up. Well, they're not telling you that a substantial percentage of those had their policies terminated because you can only have one kind of policy now. It doesn't matter if you don't want drug intervention treatment. Doesn't matter if you don't want maternity treatment. It doesn't matter if you don't want mental illness treatment. You're going to have what the Obama administration says you're going to have because he's the great decider. You don't have the freedom anymore to choose what you want. And so the majority of the 7.1 were simply people who had their policies canceled and used the website to find a new replacement policy. They were just dropped from their previous coverage. That's the majority of them. You can't count them as a benefit of your program. Good grief. And, of course, he's still counting people who haven't paid a dime. Somebody says, yeah, I think I'd like that. But they haven't paid for it. You know, again, it's like in a retail store reporting sales of people who said, boy, that video game console, that looks really neat. I'd like to have one of those. And their pleasure, their interest is counted as a sale. It is disgusting that this president would not only continue to lie, but continue to lie when everything he says is proven to be untrue, and then gloat. You ought to be disgusted if you voted for him. But probably if you voted for him, you don't have a conscience, so it wouldn't matter. Speaking of not having good judgment, former CIA former CIA director Mitchell Hayden said on Sunday that the Obama administration's apparent offer to release convicted spy Jonathan Pollard to salvage the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks is a desperate effort that could open the door for criminal spies like Edward Snowden to walk away free. I certainly don't think it's a good idea to keep some people at the table. Hayden, a Bush administration appointee and former NSA director, told Fox News. It's almost a sign of desperation to throw this into the pot, to offer a third view. If this were to take place, people in the intelligence community would not be hearing the name Pollard. They would be hearing Snowden. Well, what this proves is that the appointees of George W. Bush were as bad as the appointees of Barack Hussein Obama. They're incapable of exercising good judgment. They are amoral. The reality is that Edward Snowden isn't a traitor. He isn't somebody that we should be seeking to incarcerate. He's somebody we should celebrate. He is among the most courageous and moral individuals in the world today. He gave Americans an opportunity to recognize that their government is lying to them, that their government is invading their privacy, that the government does not trust them, that the government is out of control, that their government is in wholesale breach of the very Constitution that they swore to uphold. He gave America an extraordinary gift, one that is squandered on those like Mitchell Hayden who have lost the ability to be moral. You know, as for Jonathan Pollard, we've spoken of him before. Here's the trade that the Israelis are looking for, or the United States is looking for. They want to coax the Israelis on releasing several hundred more Muslim terrorists and convicted murderers from prison. And they will give the Israelis this man, Jonathan Pollard, who never harmed anyone, didn't kill anybody, didn't harm anybody, didn't even encourage others to harm or kill anyone. This is a man who simply shared with an ally documents that he was reviewing on behalf of the U.S. Navy. And in exchange for his release, after he has been in jail for almost 30 years, on a crime that would normally be punishable by either exile back to one's country or a year or two in jail, that they want to trade him for hundreds of convicted murderers? On what planet? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So let me explain this in a very simple way. Here is CIA director, former CIA director, Michael Hayden, who was also the director of the NSA. And he is saying that someone who tries to protect Israel, like Jonathan Pollard, he ought to be incarcerated forever. He ought to never see the light of day again. But the administration, the State Department, is fine, is appropriate in ordering the Israelis to release hundreds of convicted murderers. So it's okay. In fact, you should be free to murder Jews. But you should be locked up forever if your crime is trying to protect them. Now, that's haunting, my friends. It's particularly haunting in connection with the 18th chapter of Yeshayah, Isaiah, where God himself in his own voice says he's disgusted with America. He ought to be. This is disgusting. This is the former head of the CIA, former head of the NSA. And he is saying, in essence, you ought to lock up forever someone who tries to protect Jews, but you ought to free those who murder them. There's a story out of the Ukraine this morning that I wanted to address. The It's, if you want to watch video of it, I'm sure you could Google it, but in the Parliament of Ukraine, this would be the parliament that America, through the International Monetary Fund, just authorized $25 billion worth of our dollars to provide to these people because they're bankrupt. Well, they had a fight. Yeah, we're not talking about a disagreement. They were yelling at each other. No. Fist fight. Ah, in the middle of Parliament, just broke into a fist fight. So mature of them. That same kind of attitude that, of course, was displayed when they were rioting in the streets of Kiev prior to the rioters taking control of the elected government. It's the kind of attitude that the Ukrainians possessed as they perpetrated their pogroms, killing hundreds of thousands of Jews in the most savage way possible. Well, there's another part of this story. The reason for the fistfight is that the new government, we'll put government in quotes here because it's mob rule now in the Ukraine. The new government of the Ukraine has sent riot police to squash a protest by pro-Russians in the eastern Ukraine. So here's a government that claims to be legitimized, that is looked at and praised around the world by the likes of the Obama administration for representing the true interests of the Ukrainian people and their fight for freedom and their fight against totalitarian police actions against free demonstrations. Now say, no, you can't demonstrate if you're on the other side. If your view is opposed to ours, you can't demonstrate, and sending the riot police to squash a demonstration. Pure hypocrisy. It is why we have no business in the Ukraine. Now, unfortunately for Russia, the Ukraine had been part of Russia for centuries, and therefore it's on their border. They probably have to deal with this. But let them deal with it. Whether we dealt with Kiev thus far and with Crimea thus far has been brilliant, appropriate, without loss of life. They seem to be much better at it than we are, and we ought not be involved. Pure hypocrisy. There's another story that crossed the news wires just as this show began to air today, and that is that the Supreme Court has decided that it will not hear the case of the Arizona photographer. Now, let me share a little bit about this with you, because it tells you that you only have the illusion of freedom in America. You're only free now in America to do as political correctness dictates. If you are an advocate of socialist secular humanism, of political correctness, of the national religion of America, which is the religion of its politics, the religion of its academic institutions, the religion of its media, if you adhere to the religion that is the national religion of America, socialist secular humanism and political correctness, you're free to do whatever you want, so long as it's in complete compliance with the national religion of this country. But if you aren't willing to accept the imposition of a national religion, then you have no freedoms. Let me remind you a little bit about this case. A homosexual couple wanted to photograph their wedding. They went to a fellow who says, you know, I just don't want to do that. No, thank you. I appreciate the request, but I really don't want to do it. He's a business to photograph. I'm sure he has turned down many clients in the past and others that he has accepted. He didn't want to memorialize a homosexual wedding. It's his choice, right? No. No, the homosexual couple sued him because that's not acceptable to them. That you have to comply with them. You have to serve them. And so the case was heard in a court, and some moronic judge said, yeah, right, sue him. Not only sue him, she rendered a verdict against the photographer, saying that the photographer had no right to choose who he wanted to do business with. That he had no freedom to say, no, I don't want to memorialize a homosexual wedding. I just choose not to do that. And so the state legislative body of Arizona hearing this, passed a new law that said, you know, if your conscience tells you that you ought not, that you don't want to do something as a business, you ought to have the right to turn down business. Well, the governor vetoed that law because of pressure from the NFL and from gay rights organizations. The Supreme Court has decided they don't want to hear it. Now, this is an issue that is right up constitutional alley. But no, they don't want to hear it. It's just like they don't want to hear any case on gun laws, because they know that if they hear it, they would have to overturn that verdict. And they know, because it's the imposition of a religion, they know they would have to overturn it, so they don't want to have to hear it. They don't want to have to hear the gun review, gun control laws either, because they know the Constitution is clear. They would have to overturn them all, and so they don't hear them. Another story that made the headlines this morning, 22 Jordanian police have been taken to the hospital after clashes with Syrian refugees at the Zaatari camp in northern Jordan. This is important to us because the prophecy regarding the fall of Damascus and the fall of the Syrian government has the collateral damage reaching into Lebanon and to Jordan, specifically with the outcasts, the refugees there, being collateral damage for as part of that war. And that's what we're witnessing here. Authorities said that a refugee had been killed in the unrest. Security forces used tear gas to disperse stone-throwing refugees who had set fire to tents and vehicles. I would encourage you, if you're near a computer, to Google the Zaatari. It's spelled Z-A-A-T-A-R-I, but even if you were to misspell it, you'll find it. Refugee camp in Jordan. It is a veritable sea of squalor. In fact, as I understand it, it is not only the second largest refugee camp behind Dadaab in eastern Kenya. It has become the second or third largest city in the entire country of Jordan. Now, the sprawling refugee camp, which houses some 106,000 refugees, has had seen several protests since its opening, mostly over poor living conditions. It is the world's second largest, as I said, refugee camp. It's along the Syrian border in Jordan. And the Jordanian authorities said that the violence broke out after police arrested a group of refugees trying to leave the camp illegally. Now, think about that. Now, the refugees are saying that it broke out because the police ran over a child and giggled as they did it. Kind of like the San Francisco Police Department or Fire Department running over the first to die in that plane crash, having video cameras showing it, having someone in the cabin of the fire truck saying, watch out, there's a girl right there, running over him, and then hiding from the truth. Well, in this case, those in the camp say that the policeman running roughshod through the camp ran over an infant, and that caused the unrest. But let's just take the official view that they cracked down on the camp because refugees were trying to leave the camp illegally. That means it's not a refugee camp. That means it's a prison. If you are not free to leave, then it's a prison. Let's call it what it is. And let's not pretend that Jordanians are good guys. The residents of Zaatari said that the clashes occurred because a Jordanian policeman ran over a Syrian child. Eyewitness also said a number of refugees injured in the unrest was much higher than what was being confirmed by officials. There is very little justice in the Islamic world, and truth is the first casualty in Islam. I offer this story as evidence. A Pakistani Christian couple have been sentenced to death for blasphemy after sending a text message insulting Prophet Muhammad. Let's be clear. Muhammad was not a prophet. He tried to predict the future. His day of doom was his most often prophesied event. He told those who would listen to him, and it's duly recorded, that the day of doom would occur 500 years after his rise to the prophethood. That would mean that it would have had to have occurred around 1100. That would have been, well, a whole lot of years ago, right? Almost 900 years, maybe more, ago. That was his most often repeated prophecy. He also predicted that during the last days that rocks would scream out to Muslims, jihadists, and say, "Hey, Muslim, there's a Jew hiding behind me. Why don't you kill him?" He also said that that in the end days that women would outnumber men 100 to 1, and that all men would have white hair. He had lots of predictions. He just didn't get anyone right. So in Pakistan, this is a nation that the United States pays for the entirety of their military, giving them many billions of dollars a year, allegedly, to fight terrorism, even though the very terrorist organization that America has been fighting for the last dozen years in Afghanistan, the Taliban, is part of the Pakistani government. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but here's a country worse. Giving lots of money to, and they have laws, and they sentence people to death for criticizing Muhammad. Now, first, it was called the Prophet Muhammad. They insulted the Prophet Muhammad. Now, I'm going to get to insult in a moment, but Prophet, let's toss the term. Muhammad never got a single prediction right. Not one. So he's not a prophet. But it's important to use words right, correctly, to know what they mean. It's important to shed one's ignorance and actually look at the record. I've taken the time. I've investigated the Hadith and the Quran. I've written a 1,000-page book based upon what the 5 earliest sources say. And I can tell you with absolute certainty that Muhammad got every prophecy that he uttered wrong. Therefore, he was not a prophet. As for insulting him, how do you insult someone who was a rapist? How do you insult someone who was a pedophile? How do you insult somebody that was incestuous? How do you insult somebody that was a mass murderer? How do you insult somebody that engaged in the slave trade? How do you insult somebody that kidnapped for ransom? How do you insult somebody that acknowledged that they lied? What, you call them a liar, a rapist, a pedophile, a mass murderer, a terrorist? How is that insulting when the one uniform conclusion that can be drawn from the 5 oldest Islamic sources that Muhammad was a multiple rapist, that he was incestuous, that he was a repulsive pedophile, that he was a mass murderer, that he was a ruthless terrorist, an avowed liar, a kidnapper, slave trader. When the earliest and most credible Islamic sources confirm these things, how do you insult such an individual? Would you insult him by saying he was a really good guy? Would you insult him by saying, well, the only way you can insult him is to lie, isn't it? Well, the only way you could keep from insulting him would be to lie. The couple named Safkat Emmanuel and Sagufta Kassar were found guilty of sending a text message to the imam of their local mosque. Now, it wouldn't be their local mosque because they were Christians. Allegations of blasphemy against Islam are taken very seriously in Pakistan. Yeah, it's Sharia law. Yeah, in Sharia law, you can insult anybody other than Allah, Islam, and the Quran, Muhammad included. And in that case, you can't even talk honestly about them. No, truth is not an alibi. You can't quote the times in the Islamic hadith that have been documented that Muhammad was a rapist. You can't quote him. You can't quote when Muhammad engaged in pedophilia, even though that's what the Islamic sources say. Can't do it. Truth is not acceptable. In a country ruled by religion, truth is the first casualty. Several recent cases have prompted international concern about the application of blasphemy laws. Well, no kidding, Sherlock. The Imam brought the complaint against the couple last July. In 2009, the rumored desecration of a copy of the Quran led to a mob burning of nearly 40 homes and a church in Pakistan. At least 8 members of the Christian community were burned alive in the violence. And so to speak about a religion as despicable as Islam, and to tell the truth about it, and to say that what Islam motivates people to do is hideous, now you can't do in that country. So what hope is there for the people? You know, when Yahweh says their iniquity is full, what he means is that a population has reached the point where truth is irrelevant, where there is no opportunity that anyone is going to know the truth. That they become universally despicable. You want to see universally despicable? You want to see hopelessness? You want to see zero opportunity for ever knowing right from wrong? Look at Pakistan. In fact, look at any Islamic country where Muslims make up the vast majority of the people.